coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borak Thungathis, and welcome to the continuing coverage of the 2000 AD presence at San Diego Comic-Con 2018. I'm your host, Molchar, and this week we're bringing you the Judge Dredd Supercop or Satire panel. He's the hardline cop bringing justice to the mean futuristic streets of Megacity 1, but is Judge Dredd a hero or a villain? Is he a law enforcement role model, or, in the light of recent years, is he becoming a worrying vision of the future? Panelists debating the pros and cons of the lawman of the future include Mark Russell, the writer on Judge Dredd Under Siege, comics journalist Meg Downey, comics journalist Rosie Knight, and Evan Narcisse, who's not only a journalist but also a comic book writer. A fascinating discussion over the next 45 minutes as we get not just the insight of people who've read 2000 AD and Judge Dredd for a long time, but also complete outsiders, particularly Americans who, obviously with the political situation over there, have their own very strong opinions about Judge Dredd and whether he is super cop or satire.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Judge Dredd Supercop or Satire panel.
Ooh,
give me a round of applause so I can move you there.
Yeah.
Who's here just to hear a British accent?
Yeah. Well, I think you'll find you've arrived for a particularly fine one.
Yeah. Now you're still going to stay for the rest of the panel.
Yeah.
That's how they get you.
My accent will oscillate between Yorkshire and the South Coast quite easily over the next hour. My name is Mike Molcher. I'm the publicity coordinator for 2000 AD, the galaxy's greatest comic and home of Judge Dredd. I'll introduce our panel in a second. This is a repeat of a panel that we did at New York last year, which went down particularly well, so I kind of wanted to revisit it with different panelists and see what new perspectives we get on it. I've actually written something down to read, like a professional. Judge Dredd is one of the great iconic characters in comic books, created by John Wagner and Carl Siskela in 1977. 122 years in the future, Dredd is a hardline authoritarian cop from the crowded, crime-ridden megalopolis of Megacity One, which stretches down the eastern seaboard of the United States of America. Judge, jury, and executioner all rolled into one. For more than 40 years, he's brought his brand of instant justice down on the heads of the guilty and the not-so-guilty. For someone characterized as having little to no emotion, he's a remarkably versatile character, appearing in stories featuring everything from wacky slapstick to deep pathos via extreme humor, extreme violence, and black humor. Arguably more relevant today than at any point in the last four decades, he has even entered the English lexicon, becoming a metaphor for police brutality and arbitrary law enforcement. Political comment and satire have always been an intrinsic part of Dredd, but as current events seem to overtake even Wagner and the Scalers' extreme imagination, how much is Dredd viewed as a model for modern policing? Has the strip lost its satirical edge in the minds of the public, or is it still ready to shine a light on our contemporary world and demonstrate that Dredd is meant to be a warning and not a template? I would like you to extend a very warm welcome to our panel, comics journalist Rosie Knight, journalist and writer Evan Narcisse, comics journalist Meg Downey, writer of Judge Dredd Under Siege for IDW, Mark Russell. Give him a round of applause. Time to go off script now. With that introduction out of the way, let's just kind of...
Mike, I want to start.
Okay.
Same? I want to start.
Oh, okay. Right, excellent. Cool.
It's funny, something that you mentioned off the introduction is like the unintended adoption of the symbology of these characters, right? Mm-hmm. Something that weirds me out is when you see the Punisher symbol used in any context outside of comics, it kind of bothers me. And there was an incident in American City, where cops had put the Punisher symbol on the hoods of cars.
Yes.
As a symbol of the Blue Lives Matter movement. And my first reaction as a longtime comic book fan is that y'all know what the Punisher's about? Because he's about extra legal punishment. He's about circumventing the system that we're supposed, that y'all are supposed to be upholding as paid protectors of people's lives and property. So if that's your symbol, then something's wrong. And Dredd, I feel like for me, has always been satire, mm-hmm. and never been a template for actual execution of justice. Execution is a totally unintended pun, sorry. but yeah, that rings very true to me, the idea that a symbol can be perverted like that. I mean, part of the thing about using the Punisher like that is you have to believe that the system is broken in order to think that the Punisher is a hero. And if you're a cop and you believe the system is broken and you're part of the system, then, well, look to thine own self.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I want to just talk to Mark for a second, because you've written the Under Siege IDW series, which... it's pretty on the nose in terms of its kind of political and satirical bent. Do you want to explain a little bit about whether you found that a tightrope to walk, or whether you were like, absolutely, I'm going to go down this direction?
Yeah, more the latter. I was pretty unambiguous about how to handle Judge Dredd, because I don't really see a dichotomy between super cop and satire. I think that it is both. Like, the satire is kind of like a cracked mirror shown back to people in a way that shows them a little bit distorted, but also the unflattering truth. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what people need to see. It's distorted just enough so they can abstract themselves from it, they don't get super defensive, but ultimately, yeah, this is where we're headed if we don't change course. So in that sense, it is satire. But the thing that's really kind of horrifying about Judge Dredd and about Mega City 1 is that Judge Dredd is doing everything by the book. He's doing everything according to the law, and it's still horrifying. It's still like abusive and oppressive, and I think that's why Judge Dredd is perhaps more relevant than ever, because it's not about cops going off script. It's not about a few bad apples anymore. It's about the institutions themselves betraying the public they're meant to protect. Mm-hmm. And when I was reading 1984, the thing that horrified me the most about it was the idea that they've created the civilization for the benefit of nobody. It's like every, you know, if you're one of the proles or whatever, you just sort of like work away at this like impoverished sort of destitute life. If you're the inner party, you're going to get thrown into like these, you know, cells like attach rats to your face, or, you know, find the worst thing for the world to break you psychologically. And then if you're in the inner party, you are all constantly living in terror of the other people in the inner party. Right. And Big Brother doesn't exist. So it's like this self-perpetuating machine of torture and human misery. And that's kind of the way I see Mega City 1. It's like they created this civilization where Judge Dredd is a hammer and everyone else is like a loose nail on this cardboard, and it doesn't benefit anybody. Even the hammer doesn't really get to enjoy life, because they're just so slavishly devoted to law and order that all they can conceive of is hammering the nails. So it's like you create this perpetual motion machine that does nothing but, you know, produces nothing but misery. Anyway, that's my rant. Thank you for enduring.
I think that's like really spot on, and I also think that the thing that's really interesting about Judge Dredd and talking about systems like that, whether it's 1984 or The Punisher, these things, they were like very prescient, and now as we go further, we see them actually reflected to the point where there are things that happen in real life that if you put them in Judge Dredd or 1984, you'd probably be like, oh, that's kind of over the top.
If I can just interject, like issue number 2 of Under Siege came out, and it's largely about how the people of this the city block, the Patrick Swayze block, were left with no way of like making a living, so they all ultimately sort of like have to like sell their organs to this business in the mall called the Kidney Hut, where you sign up for a family plan and they take a kidney like every 6 months and they give you regular like paychecks, sort of like, you know, these like cash and go places. But the block revolts against the Kidney Hut because they the person whose kidney they're looking for isn't there, so they take her 4-year-old brother. Ooh. And there's this scene, and the Kidney Hut like collectors were, I intentionally made them look, you know, to look, I wanted to design them to look like ICE agents. Like they wear the same sort of black, and they're called internal collection agents. So they have the ICA on the back, and the A sort of like looks like an E. And I remember when issue number 2 came out, there, I was looking at the panel where the ICE agent, or the ICA agents, oh, apologies, are carrying this 4-year-old out of this woman's apartment while she's screaming in terror. And I remember thinking, I wrote this when it was still science fiction.
Yeah.
Well, also as well, like, on a really direct kind of even more obvious thing, there was some photos that went viral recently, which were adverts outside student bookshops to sell your blood for money so you could afford textbooks. And the more we get into this kind of rapid capitalism that we're kind of living under, the Judge Dredd stuff becomes real, because at the moment we are living in a society where for a vast amount of people, it actually isn't enjoyable. We make enjoyment out of our lives, or people have families and stuff, but there are people who don't have a living wage. Most people, you know, rent gets higher. You end up working, you know, living to work instead of working to live. And obviously with Judge Dredd and the kind of metaphor of it used to be a metaphor of judge, jury, and executioner, that's very real.
Yeah.
In America and in the UK, police are allowed to kill people, specifically marginalized people, and they are never punished for it. And they are protected. And that is exactly the same as Judge Dredd, except in Dredd's world, it's written that he's allowed to do that. Here it isn't, but we're shown that really police are allowed to do that.
We yearn for a day when that was extra legal. You know, you needed someone like someone like the Punisher did that. The reality is that just the run-of-the-mill cop who's like fresh out of the academy can do that and get away with it, which is really the dystopia. It's like people, I think, don't realize that they live in a dystopia because there's still Taco Bells, still Pottery Barns.
Of course. The thing that I found most, I'm very new to Judge Dredd, so like I'm coming to all of this from a current lens. Like every time, like when I picked up Judge Dredd for the first time, like this was all going on. So I didn't have that like transitional phase. And I was really struck by the fact that he's a character who on one hand also kind of seems to represent a sort of wish fulfillment for what we want that authoritarian force to be. Like it's, oh, well, they're trained from like practically birth. They're there until they're dead. Like you can't quit. And it's this sort of, I don't like not rose colored, obviously, because they're definitely not good people, but it's this idea that, you know, like, oh, we could probably trust these guys because we're clearly doing as much as we possibly can to get them indoctrinated into the system.
The benevolent oppressors.
Right, exactly.
They've been trained from birth, so they know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's the dichotomy of Dredd as well, is he's essentially an indentured servant. He's been raised since birth to believe something, and that comes back to even then, those are Hitler Youth.
He's not a bad guy, he's just a role player.
Yeah.
He's someone who's just following the trail of incentives that have been laid out for him, and acting as society has sort of like required him to act the same way as the people he's shooting. The same, which is really kind of the satirical element. It's like everyone's doing exactly what they're designed to do, and the result is just this bloodbath between the two.
It's interesting that one of the themes that crops up again and again is exactly that Dredd fulfills a role, and so long as he keeps doing that, then everything is, well, relatively fine.
Right.
As soon as he acts as an individual in the system, everything breaks.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you have that kind of 1984-esque person stepping, you know, being out of step with everybody else, the entire system comes crumbling down. So the more recent stuff with the Tour of Duty epic and the Day of Chaos, a lot of that is to do with Dredd having a sudden moment of empathy for mutants. And for mutants, read every minority, every marginalized group he could possibly can, and he breaks the system. And that's the wonderful way about it, that John Wagner does it, is that he doesn't say, well, therefore it's a bad thing to be out of step with the system. That's a way of him saying the system is fundamentally broken if all it takes is for one man to do a good thing, and for all this woe, all these terrible things to come raining down.
Right, your institution's that fragile that one person saying this isn't true is enough to cause the house of cards crumbling down, then the institution is probably long out of date.
Yeah.
It's probably needed to change a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm particularly interested in is because as British people, we know exactly what Judge Dredd is. It's something we've grown up with. It's very much in step with our sense of humour. But sometimes it has felt, I'm not saying this is universal, I'm not saying that, that you know, anybody's necessarily wrong, but sometimes it feels that some American audiences don't quite get the joke.
Okay, I want to start. I want to talk about this. I don't remember the first Judge Dredd comic I read. It was definitely before the crossovers with Batman, like in the mid-90s. Mm. And the thing that struck me about Judge Dredd, well, two things. At first, it didn't even occur to me that it was happening on the North American continent. I thought it was. I thought Mega City 1 was in Britain. Mm-hmm. Once I realized it was on the North American continent, it was supposed to be like New York City down all the way down to Miami or whatever. It was the first place that I got a sense of how the rest of the world must see America, mm-hmm. right? They think we're crazy. They think that like the streets run wild with lawlessness and that there's a John Wayne square-jawed, you know, archetype lawman that we all imagine or wish for to patrol these streets. And this commentary is on capitalism and excess and consumerism. I was like, oh, they think we're disgusting. And it was like, oh, well, we are disgusting in some ways. So, and that was a little bit of the fractured mirror that Mark was talking about. Like, it was the first place where I realized that, you know, America thinks it's awesome, and American exceptionalism is an exceptional drug. But once you realize that somebody outside of that feedback loop has commentary about you, you're like, oh, okay. So as to whether, like, I as an American was in on the joke, like, yes, but also you realize the joke is on you. The weird thing about the various waves of British creators coming into comics is, like, that's where I, you know, the only places I've picked up Bob's Your Uncle or British slang like that is in British comics. So you grow up reading that stuff and absorbing that stuff and very much building a stereotype of what the British mentality is in your brain. So the fucked up thing about Judge Dredd is you realize, oh, I'm absorbing whatever stereotype they have of us, too. Like, whatever they think we're like in America, with malls run wild and all that stuff, like, and then you're experiencing that for the first time. So, like, yeah, you're in on a joke, but you realize the joke's on you.
Well, I also think that one of the interesting things, and this is, like, less a critique of any creator specifically on Judge Dredd, but of a mindset that Brian has, it's a way of deflecting from our own problems, because yeah. Dredd was created under, you know,
the height of Thatcherism.
Yeah, essentially fascism.
Well, I mean, this is one of the interesting things is because it wasn't, but John Wagner and Pat Mills and Alan Grant saw the writing on the wall because it was the rise of Thatcher. 1976, 1977,
yeah.
When she'd become the leader of the Conservative Party, and from our perspective, that's quite raw because we're going through the same thing now.
Yeah.
A conservative government, apparently without morals.
Yeah, and I
apparently.
Think,
yeah. I'm being kind, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think that the interesting thing is, like, there are creators, you know, who are involved in it, and I think part of that came from what they saw in the UK, but the framework they use to criticize it is an American one, and this idea of a militarized police and stuff, which at the time in America didn't exist in the same way as it does now.
Yeah.
But it's funny because it built this space for creators to begin to criticize England, because when Alan Moore wrote V for Vendetta, it was very much, even in the foreword, he talks about it being a response to the Conservative government and the homophobia during the AIDS crisis. And I think, like, in that way, it's really interesting because even still to today, people in England have a big problem where they want to, like, they'll, like, share a photo on the internet and they'll be like, look at this charming copper dancing with someone at gay pride. One, like, why are cops at pride? But two, like, they're there and they'll say that and they'll be like, you know, and here's a picture of an American policeman. But the reality is, since 1990, there have been, like, almost 2,000 deaths in police custody in the UK or within 24 hours of being in contact with the police. And obviously most of them were young black men or people with mental health issues. And it's very easy to use the framework of America, which is such a big country and has such a militarized police force, to deflect from like our own issues.
It's worse over there. Look at all those guns. That's a really dangerous argument. It's like when somebody says, oh, you write something critical about the American government, and say, oh, you don't like it, go live in Guatemala.
Yeah.
Like, well, is that the bar? Or anything above, like, you know, living in, you know, squalor is like, okay, then you've got nothing to complain about.
That's recently changed in Britain, where with Brexit, it's if you don't like it, go and live in France.
Mm-hmm.
I'd quite like to live in France.
Yeah, no, it's a very nice place.
Also, we can't do that.
The French don't want us anymore. It's quite upsetting.
To follow up on Evan's point earlier, which I thought was very cogent about, like, this is sort of like how British people see America. Mm. This is like and that we don't really get that. It reminds me of the first time I went to Tijuana. Like I guess it was the first. But yeah, I was 18. I'd never been to Mexico before. And I go to Tijuana and they got like mules painted like donkeys, and they, you know, everywhere is like tequila, and they want to sell like weird illegal Viagra. And I thought, man, Mexico's kind of gross. And then I realized that no, this is what they're selling to us. Yeah. This is what they think we want. It's not Mexico that's gross, it's their idea of Americans. And I think that in a lot of ways, Judge Dredd is a Tijuana. You know, it's like, we don't realize that this is, the commentary about us is not flattering.
Hmm. One of the things I want to ask about, I don't know if everybody on the panel has read it, is Judge Dredd America, which is one of the all-time greatest Judge Dredd stories. And that opens with a refrain from Dredd, which ends with, justice has a price, the price is freedom. And I want to ask you about, and we've already kind of touched on it, but the lies people tell themselves about the world they think they want to live in. Meg, I want to come to you.
I think there's the lies we tell, like, that's comics, right? Like, that's superheroes. That's all superheroes. Like, I come to Dredd and I come to superhero fiction just in general, and I don't know if I necessarily qualify Dredd as a superhero, but that's the lens I'm approaching him through because that's my reflex. You know, these characters, especially these, like, fictionalized military units, all have this very sort of, you know, like, oh, well, they're bad, but, like, Dredd is the sanity and the chaos. Like, he's the person who is doing right by this sort of terrible place. And he's, you know, like, he's obviously an agent of, you know, a horribly oppressive force, but at the same time, he's also basically the only thing in this world that represents any sort of stability. And that's where superheroes come from. That is the origin story of American comics. It's the origin story of basically all comics.
I also think, like, and this is a tiny bit off topic, but I don't think you can underestimate the impact of Dredd and the vision of Mega City One has had on, like, how comic book movies have been done. Like, everything, the Ultimates, right? Which is what a lot of the MCU stuff is based on. Suddenly everyone is like a military guy. Like, Rhodey is an anti-war pacifist in a lot of the comics, but in the film, suddenly he's like this, like, I'm an army guy and I'm protecting you. Because the reality is that, like you talk about, it's this idea of, like, wanting protectors or wanting someone who's, like, it's their job to look after you. You don't want just a random superhero running about with no government oversight or no connection to a government.
Right.
I think a lot of the times that's why people maybe think that Judge Dredd is a superhero rather than, you know, a commentary or a kind of highlighting some of the worst parts of... Because really, Mega City One is a carceral state. It's a police state, you know, and I think that's why a lot of it, in America especially, is, like, really powerful. America, I don't know if anyone's read it, it's about like a Bennett Beanie, and she grows up and she has a lot of privilege within Mega City One, and she becomes a famous singer, and then she basically becomes part of a resistance cell, which is a terrorist organization in the context of Mega City One. And it's about her and this double life that's being led in Mega City One, and it's really powerful. And it was a book I think it's one of the books that is the most forward about the satirical elements of of Judge Dredd?
Because I always find it interesting when I see people debating the nature of Dredd, and they say, well, he's harsh, but he's fair. You know, and I kind of the concept of an equal opportunities oppressor is I think quite seductive, because then you're projecting the idea that, well, if you do get smacked over the head with a nightstick, if you do get put in the cubes, well, you must have done something bad.
It's sort of the same mentality of, like, I think that people use to defend, you know, putting children in cages and making them appear before an immigration judge assisted at the age of 3. It's like, well, in the end, it's like, what part of illegal don't you understand? That's their only argument. But it's like you say, well, maybe we should take people who've been jaywalking illegally and send them to Paris Island, you know, and deprive them of their kids, or send them to Devil's Island, you know, and take their kids away. It's like the argument they always fall back on, well, they didn't want that to happen, they shouldn't have broke the law. But it completely evades the argument that maybe the law shouldn't be so draconian.
Right.
Or maybe the law is itself, you know, open to debate.
And really the sense that I got in, you know, the reading Dredd and in approaching him is that everyone in Mega City 1, just by existing, is breaking the law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it doesn't really matter.
That's the whole point.
Like, right. Everyone, you just...
And I think we do that now.
Up.
We the criminal code's so long, and there's so many things that it opens it up to illegal and to selective enforcement, that the policeman can then pick and choose which crimes to enforce, because somewhere something is always being broken.
And you see that with the police-involved shootings that we've all been talking about. All a cop has to say is, I felt threatened.
Yeah.
I felt like my life was in danger. And there you go.
You know, and the famous quote that everyone says is, like, everything the Nazis did was legal.
Yeah.
And I think, like, yeah, that's like it's a good way of kind of exposing that, and Dredd deals with a lot of that. But also, like, everything the police are doing now is technically legal, and I think that's, like, important to look at what is, and think kids in cages, which is also a big problem the UK has.
I don't see that as a very good argument. Like, well,
no,
it's legal or it's law. It's like, yeah, these are the laws. You mean you fix the system? So of course the laws you pass are going to, you know, reflect your interests. But yeah, I think it really foments the bigger debate about if you're just acting according to law and these horrible things are happening, then obviously the institutions are broken, and we need to have that argument. You know.
I have a question.
Yeah.
How many Americans have written Dredd?
Yeah. Well, there's Mark, obviously.
Eric was on our last panel. I was doing it with you. They were doing the IDW.
You know what? I can't remember anything. This is Comic Con. I can't remember anything that happened before this panel.
It's
completely wiped my own memory.
A lot of the newer, I mean, some of the newer Judge Dredd.
Yes, yeah. Dwayne, I'm going to mispronounce his surname.
Swazinski.
He
I mispronounced it for you.
Yeah, thank you. He worked on the IDW stuff. Not that many. There's one or two.
Ulysses Farinas with IDW.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm friends with Douglas, too. I'm Douglas.
Yeah. But it's been interesting looking at the reaction to a lot of the IDW stuff. It's coming from a very different perspective. So the first thing Ulysses Farinas and Eric Freitas did was took Dredd out of Mega City 1.
Mm-hmm.
So he became a fish out of water. And whatever anybody's opinion on their Mega City 0 is, I found that absolutely fascinating, because all of a sudden he's in a place where he has no authority. And what happens to a man who is the embodiment of authority?
I am the law.
Yeah. What happens when he is the law, when there is no law?
And he had no framework. So it's like, ironically, like, the story is like, he almost falls into this, like, savior role, because, like, that's kind of what he did when there was a framework. So suddenly he's, like, helping a kid or something. He's, like, going between these towns, and he's like, And I think that's, like, so interesting. And it's also, I think, quite rare that's, like, you get this far into a character's history and that's new.
Yeah.
Because everyone's always trying to do so many things, but the framework of Dredd and Mega City 1 is, like, so engaging. And so, is so expansive that people rarely ever take them out of it.
Yeah, one of the stories I pitched to IDW, which they rejected, was him going to Mini City One, which was like a small enclave of hipsters built on the ruins of the Mall of America. They've turned the Orange Julius into like an artisanal like toast, thing, and they all kind of like have their own 3D printers and they make their own products and sell them to each other at craft fairs. And it's a sort of idyllic, sort of very West Coast type of thing. And he's utterly flummoxed. He's there's no real crime. He doesn't really understand what he's supposed to do there until like the real estate developer starts swooping in and putting in Outback steakhouses and stuff. Then, and he's like, okay, now I know what to do. He has to defend the hipsters from the yuppies.
Defending the first level gentrifiers from the second level.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yes. Whoever's next in line, that's the one we don't want.
Yeah. I'd have to have a word with Denton about that. I think we should have. They should have totally gone for that.
Yeah,
they make it like a backup in a different.
Yeah,
of like I give them like five ideas of the five. That was maybe like the third weirdest. We'll see.
What I'd like to ask next is about the value of satire in an age beyond satire, because as we've already commented, sometimes it's hard to keep up with the world when you are trying to satirize it. And when the world's a relatively depressing place, not necessarily going in the direction
anyone
would like, how is it just a case of you just try and keep out pacing satire, or is it that you need to rethink what you're doing?
That's a good question, yeah, because it's kind of... deflating when you're outflanked by reality.
Yeah.
You know, when you write about like them taking a 4-year-old kid away to harvest his kidneys, and then you see very similar images on the news, a week later. I don't think I'm clever enough to try to like be that calculating. I just have to write about the world as I see it, as I experience it, and put it in through the prism of this fictional framework that I'm working in, and just sort of let the chips fall where they may. Mm-hmm. But I think, sadly, the things that sort of that really destroy me and bug me about the human race will be with us for a long time, so I don't worry about them kind of like becoming too topical. I feel like they'll always be at least somewhat topical.
Mm. That was your Flintstones.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like basically saying the problems we had we can all kind of blame on bedrock. They started the fundamental problems with civilization 10,000 years ago.
I mean, you always kind of run that risk, right, where, I mean, like Evan was talking about at the beginning of the panel, the Punisher problem, where you have, ostensibly a satire or a character who is, by definition, satirical in his, methods. What happens when that character becomes reality? Does that satire stop being, does it stop having worth? Is there a way that someone could potentially, in real life, emulate Judge? Like, could we start seeing like Judge Dredd helmets showing up on cop cars at some point?
They have in Britain.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Whew.
Have a unit like, not like a unit, but I've heard like in the academies and stuff, they really love Dig Judge Dredd.
I think the one thing we're lucky with Judge Dredd is he doesn't have the Punisher skull is so iconic,
right?
It's very
yeah.
easy to be repurposed,
yeah.
So
he's harder to brand.
Yeah. And when you see it in public, you know exactly what sort of person you're dealing with.
Well, we were helping at Bakersfield Comic Con, and it was my friend Nicole was exhibiting, and it was a Comic Con with a Ren Faire and a gun show next door. And when the people, it was a lot. And the weirdest thing about it was that because you could walk through
the crossover,
everything,
yeah,
you could not tell if the people with the Punisher logos were there for the comics or the gun show. But it was like, it sounds funny, but it was actually pretty like, oh yeah, that's
oops,
what that has become. And I wonder what that feels like to the people who created that as a symbol. You know, like the famous story is Death Wish, the guy, the Charles Bronson movie, the guy who wrote the book, it was meant to be an anti-vigilante story, and he hated the movie, and he hated what the movie was about, because it made him an anti-hero.
Well, it's the Fight Club syndrome as well.
Oh, you know,
people want to emulate Fight Club without understanding the intrinsic homoerotic underscore.
It's like what happened to John Rambo. If you ever watched the First Blood movie, it's about this Vietnam vet who comes home and he's got no place to live. And he's, you know, was trained to be the special forces guy. He's not really trained to live in American peacetime civilization. So the cops, you know, railroad him. They throw him in the cell. They're hosing him down. And his special forces training kicks in. And he takes out the cops and, you know, goes hides in the woods. And they have to come get him. It's really this tragic tale about PTSD. But then, like, later he becomes sort of the poster boy for sending more people to, like, war. Rambo Part 2. It's kind of weird how people so badly miss the point that they end up using these stories in the opposite way that the writers intended.
It was interesting to me that the Alex Garland Dread movie, mm-hmm. the reaction to that, because a lot of people said, well, where's the wacky humor, where's the extreme civilians. I saw a lot of people saying, well, where's the satire? And I can't remember, it's in the idea of the whole thing from the beginning.
That movie was actually I had known of the character, obviously, but watching that movie in theaters was actually my first time that I'd ever, like, experienced a Judge Dredd story. And I came out of the theater, and it actually came up very recently in my life. I don't remember why. It was before you even asked me to be on this panel. And I was talking to my friend about that movie, and I called it campy. And my friend looked at me, and she's like, I didn't think that movie was campy. And I was like, what? Like, you did
the slow motion drop that makes time move
like,
slowly.
Wait, really? And it was just, it was very bizarre to have that encounter with a person who was just like, no, it was just a really good action movie. It's like, but, oh.
What's the quote about the Brian Bolland iteration of Dredd and that iconic Brian Bolland, sorry, I pronounced it. He should always look like he just stepped in shit. and Carl Urban did that the entire movie.
Yeah.
And that's camp.
Because
if you're taking it seriously, then you give him a range of emotions, right? Mm-hmm. If you give him one, like, emotional affect, then that's camp.
It's high artifice.
Yeah.
Well, I loved the movie. I thought the movie was great, but for me, it really kind of informed what I wanted to do with my series, Under Siege, because for me, I loved the movie, but it really sort of has the same sort of embedded ideology that you find in, you know, most superhero movies, that we're all just kind of like helpless until a white man with a gun shows up and saves everyone. So I was like, well, what are all these people in the building, you know? It's like. What if they were to play a role in their own salvation? And so my series is kind of similarly set in, like, a city block that he has to, like, he's trapped in the city block. He has to fend off an invasion of mutants this time. It's called the Patrick Swayze block, just so you know. But he cannot do it. It's just him and Judge Beanie in this city block with, like, 500 mutants trying to get to the bottom so they can, you know, invade Mega City 1. And so he cannot possibly defend this block without the help of the people that are in that actually live in Patrick Swayze. He's been abandoned by Mega City 1, and all of the jobs and services that were supposed to be provided to this block were just ignored by the city. And now the city's asking them to help save them from this invasion force. And it's about, like, about how superhero stories oftentimes forget the individual heroes and the people who actually, like, live in Gotham or live in Metropolis, or in this case, live in the Patrick Swayze block.
I think as well, like, I think that that's one of the, it's like a kind of double-edged sword of how can satire still be useful. Sometimes the satire that people don't realize is satire, you can show them a certain story or say something and be like, look, like, this is, you know, this is a fictional thing that someone made out, and the reason that you maybe don't get this satire is because it's very close to what's going on. That's what it is. And I think that with the movie, it really did that, because people say, oh, where's the satire? But it's literally a lockdown block of poverty-stricken people, like a project, like an estate in the UK that is over, you know, that is completely controlled by these kind of, like, criminal elements, but who, the, like, also, that's its own community. And it does this thing of like, oh, and then the police come in, and it's, that's the satire. It's like, I think there's a misnomer, a misunderstanding maybe that satire always has to be funny, rather than just like a commentary, you know? And I think that's the, why the movie for some people was less like obvious. And I also think that part of the Judge Dredd misunderstanding of like, if we're talking about Supercop or satire, if you look at the Dredd movie, the Stallone movie, he's a superhero. It's a superhero movie about Sylvester Stallone. He's Judge Dredd, he's got a cool sidekick, and he's gonna like fight some people or something. And you know, when you see a massive movie like that, that stuff informs your opinions and beliefs, especially of like a British floppy that you probably can't get because American shops don't like magazine size.
One thing I really like about Judge Dredd is that I think a lot of these sort of like more traditional superhero movies, unlike the Stallone movie, kind of just they serve justice, you know, as if we all have this sort of inherent knowledge of what is just, what justice is, and who the good guys are. But in real life, there is no sort of consensus on what justice is. So without that, without discussing what justice really is, what you're left with is sort of the ugly face of law. And so that's the only thing that to which Dredd can pledge his allegiance, because a concept as abstract as justice doesn't really have any meaning unless we talk about what that means. Mm-hmm. And I think that, to me, that's what a lot of about drives me to Dredd, is that it's kind of a world without any sort of debate over what justice means. Mm-hmm. It's a world where all we're left with is law.
Well, the whole thing about the Tour of Duty storyline, where he gets the anti-mutant laws rescinded, you know, he refers to it as an injustice. Mm-hmm. And you think, you really do believe that you're bringing justice as opposed to merely the law.
Right, and the very term justice means that the law inherently implies that the law can be wrong.
Yeah.
Because one thing I find fascinating in a historical context is, and coming back to British satire, British views of America, is how much the American system has always lent on symbols that have come to be associated with fascism.
Mm-hmm.
So the eagle, for one. Judge Dredd has a massive eagle on his shoulder because Carl Tosquera grew up in an actual fascist state under Franco. But it's a symbol that America shares. The coat of arms of the United States has the eagle holding the fascia. You know, the bundle of...
it's on the back of the dime, too.
Yes, yeah. exactly. Evan, I wanted to ask you whether you think, in an age like this, where there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of debate over what is right and wrong, people maybe feeling that others have lost that sense of morality, whether this is the kind of time when maybe we need characters like Judge Dredd even more, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, we do, because Dredd allows you to embody the extremist aspects of a representational government gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have him as an avatar of those elements, you can subvert him. You can use him as a piece of commentary. Like, one of the things about the current moment that really annoys me is that old school racism is like alive and well in America.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about the subtle shit where like people kind of sort of have attitudes about you, and I'm talking about all kinds of prejudices, not just racism, but like, you know, I can't believe that in 2018 that we're relitigating, like, for example, what the Civil War was about. People will say the Civil War wasn't about slavery. I'm like, well,
kind of was.
It was about economics. The economics of what? Well, the economics of slavery.
Right.
And it's states' rights. Yes, the states' rights. It's like not slavery. Yeah.
Right. Right. And these arguments, right, get reinvigorated by the idea that the symbols that we rally around just mean one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Those NFL players are kneeling because they don't respect the flag. No.
Mm-hmm.
They're kneeling because, as a form of protest against disproportionate police responses that wind up with people dead.
Mm-hmm.
But because people interpret the flag and all this iconography to mean one thing, the argument gets shifted
mm-hmm.
in a way where the actual thing it's about is not is no longer the center of discourse. And characters like Dredd, where again, they can embody like a law and order mentality, they are useful when they can be subversive, in my opinion. But you're writing it.
No, I think like that's right. And when we did this panel in New York, like to kind of jump off what Evan is saying is like, I think in its nature, Judge Dredd is subversive. And I think a lot of times that's what gets lost is like, if something, when you make it, is, you know, the fascist symbology, like the obvious fact that he is meant to be this idea of law and order just gone horribly wrong. And this kind of fascist state that becomes the normal and how people allow that to happen, because guess what, it's happened, so it must have been okay at some point, you know. And I think like in its bones, Judge like Dredd is a satire, and it is a satire of a police state, it's a satire of a carceral state, it's a satire of ridiculous laws, because that's like one of the things as well, is like there's a law against everything. There's a law against, like, I don't know, probably like having two shelves up in your kitchen or something. Like, it's always, and it's that idea of like how these things that seem really small and like ridiculous actually are part of the building blocks of like an oppressive state.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite stories is actually an Alan Grant story. I think it might be Anderson. And it's where people suddenly start self-immolating. They start setting themselves on fire. And the judges don't understand that there's no connection between the people who do it. And they're worried it's going to lead to unrest and everything. And the side division go, well, everyone's just really stressed. The system's a little bit too harsh. And so Chief Judge Vault loosens the law on how many goldfish each person can keep. And the last few frames is of this naked guy walking into this square, pouring petrol all over himself, striking a light, and then there's the tannoy that says, you know, the number of goldfish you can keep is now two, and he looks at the match and just throws it away and walks off. Because the pressure cooker has been lessened ever so slightly.
He has the hope of change.
Yeah.
That also is like, in itself, it's like, it's ridiculous, but it's also very true. It's that like, it's the model of government that we have now, where it's like, they say they're going to do something super horrific, like the Muslim ban or something, and then they take it back a little bit, and then you go, oh, well, at least it's not as bad as the original thing they were going to do.
Yeah.
You know, and it's that idea of, like, getting people to slowly accept oppressive laws and stuff as the norm by feeding them a little bit and going, well, actually, it's not that bad.
Mm.
You know, and I think Dredd is really just the perfect example, and they really play with that really, really well about what you will and won't accept and what you will and won't be grateful for.
Well, I think in times of crisis and fear, the natural human tendency, which probably goes back to our days as hunter-gatherers, is to gather around the strength, to gather around the authority. And yeah, whatever you need, man, just do it. Just keep me safe. But if that's the case, then the people in authority have an incentive to always keep you in a state of, you know,
fear. It's one of the classic examples of both fascism and authoritarianism. You need a crisis to impose, to remove rights, impose a system.
So why, people don't realize that through giving into that instinct, they're actually incentivizing being put in place in even more danger.
Mm.
That's sort of like the society of Mega City One. They don't realize that they've created this through their own sort of instinctive reaction to like wanting more law and order. Well, you know, Mega City One pours all of these resources into law and order, and it's still like, you know, incredibly lawless. It's still like, they still got like, you know, the streets are different. So obviously, the approach is not working.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't conceive of it any other approach, because this just plays their natural, you know, hunter-gatherer instinct. Like, there's danger, go to the strongest hunter. Yeah.
And that led to that wonderful moment at the end of Origins, which is John Wagner and Carl Tischler's literally origin story of the judges, where they, because this is Judge Dredd, they find Chief Judge Fargo, the first chief judge, the person that Dredd has been cloned from. He's still alive, he's been in stasis, and they're getting back to Mega City 1. And spoilers, Dredd gets summoned over, and he goes and stands next to Fargo, and Fargo says, it wasn't meant to be forever.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
The man who founded the system said it was just meant to be temporary. and Dredd, and then he dies, and Dredd goes over to Chief Judge Hershey, and Hershey says, "Oh, what did he say?" And he said, Dredd and Hershey are talking, and Hershey says, "You know, he said, you know, keep the faith, keep it going." And that's the great lie.
Yeah.
The system has to perpetuate.
Yeah, I don't know why it never occurred to anybody that you can't just, like, you know, give the baton to somebody and say, here's absolute power. Now, you got to give it back.
Well, because that's the thing about the Roman dictator. The idea was it's temporary suspension of powers, and then they give it back. And that happened exactly, I think, once in Roman history, because the dictators went, I quite like this.
Well, you know, there's still some elephants on the other side of the Alps come over at any point, so I better hold on to this baton for a while.
I think that's, like, one of the things, actually, that's, like, very realistic, and kind of going back to your point about, like, if Dredd doesn't uphold the system falls. It's a reminder, and, like, this kind of commentary is a reminder that, like, the system we have hasn't been here forever, and it doesn't have to be here forever. Prison industrial system, it needs to go. It can go. It hasn't always been like that. You know, militarized police, things like this. Those are things that you can actually change, but society doesn't want you to think that because, like you said, it needs to perpetuate a system. You know, and I think those kind of moments, the idea is if you're a powerful person and you step out of that, maybe that system could begin to kind of crumble.
Yeah, absolutely. On that cheery note, we have to wrap up. A huge round of applause for our wonderful panelists.
Well, thank you for joining us on another 2000 AD a Thrillcast Earthlets. Absolutely fascinating discussion, I hope you agree. Thank you very much indeed to Mark, Meg, Rosie, Graham and Evan. It was great to hear their opinions. If you've got any views of your own, make sure you email thrillmail@2000ad.com. That's thrillmail, all one word, @2000ad.com. Next week, it's the last of our San Diego panels as we get back on schedule with a Thrillcast, and it's a very special one. Hear me slowly lose the plot as we talk to the legendary Simon Bisley. Well, I hope you've been enjoying these panels from San Diego Earthlets. Do let us know what you think on the email or on social media. 2000 AD, as you'll hear in a moment, is @2000AD on Twitter and facebook.com/2000AD. If you have the time and are so inclined, we would be very grateful if you would go on to iTunes or the podcast provider of your choice and leave a little starred review, maybe some words about what you think about the podcast as we continue our journey through the galaxy of the universe's greatest comic, Splendid Verthrig.
Alert! 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 Fell power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the galaxy's greatest comic at 2000adonline.com. Subscribe digitally on our apps for Apple, Android, and Windows 10. And download DRM free copies from 2000adonline.com. Alert! Alert! Stand by for urgent updates. Search for 2000AD on Twitter and Facebook. Watch the latest videos at youtube.com/2000ADonline and follow on Instagram @insta2000AD. Program complete. Shutting down.